3 weeks ago, Kevin gave us all a homework assignment. And Kevin, I don't know, do you have a grade book where you're putting a check on whether people are doing what they're supposed, what they've been told? Okay. Put a little check by my name. Okay. Right. Kevin's assignment was for every one of us to be thinking hard about what's going, he told us, to be a principal emphasis in these coming months, and that is reaching out to the unchurched here in Hayes, in our own community. And he announced that as our theme, and he left us with a homework assignment of thinking about the hows. Try to come up with good ideas about how we can do this more effectively. And when I prepared my sermon this morning, that's what I tried to do. We also had some extra emphasis on this 2 weeks ago. Mike Schrage, one of our missionaries, was here. And Mike in his sermon just really emphasized how much reaching out to the lost is all of our jobs. Not just missionaries, not just preachers, but every Christian has the duty, should have the joy, to reach out and share the good news of Jesus. And so this morning what I'm going to be doing is trying to share my thoughts so far about this, and I know there's a lot more to be added and contributed by everyone before we're done with this, but I prepared a bulletin insert that I want to call to your attention at this time. We'll be using it pretty closely sometimes. It has the text that Dale read in your hearing at the beginning. And it tells you this morning we're going to do three things. We're going to start by looking at the strengths and weaknesses of what I'm going to call procedure-oriented methods of reaching out, of evangelizing. And second, I'm going to contrast that with what I think Paul is telling us in the text we heard today, and I'm going to call that the goal approach, the goal-oriented approach. And then when we get to the conclusions, that's where you're really going to need this, because I'm going to read without comment a number of these, and I hope you think about them, because the whole point of the sermon is to lead up to them and leave us some things to think about as we go out into our community. Well, let's start first with what I call strengths and weaknesses of popular procedure-oriented methods. By a procedure-oriented method of evangelism, I mean someone thinking there's a right method to use. Quite often they think there's some one-size-fits-all right method that should always be used. Sometimes they'll have a short list of two or three. But they think, this is how you do it. And so you learn it by the book, and you go out, and you practice it this way, and that's how you meet people. That's how you try to bring them in. And I'm going to discuss the strengths and weaknesses. They all have both. The four of them that I've run into, and I'm sure that you have too. The first I call the cold turkey confrontation approach. I think when Joanne and I were first Christians, and we were baptized in this church a long time ago now, that there were a lot of Bible college kids who were going to Fort Hayes at that time, and were in our group. And these Bible college kids, I remember it was right about the time we became Christians, had just been back from spring break. And they had been on a group that went up and down the beaches in Texas and in Florida. And everyone they met, they just simply asked, do you know Jesus, or are you saved? And they thought they'd done a pretty good thing. I also know that some people recommend doing something similar in the community. You just walk down the street, you go up on the porch, you ring a doorbell, you knock on the door. Someone answers the door and you say, are you saved? Do you know Jesus? There are a couple of points about this that I think are good. One, it takes some courage, doesn't it, to do this? In a lot of cases, it takes a willingness to endure some rejection and some ridicule, and we know we should be willing to do that for the gospel's sake. And I think it's also true that sooner or later, this question ought to be raised. Are you saved and do you know Jesus? Okay. But you know, I think the problem is that it shouldn't be sooner, it should be later. Okay. I think what happens when we start with that kind of a question is that for every person that we influence properly, we drive dozens, maybe hundreds away. There are a lot of people who are not very much impressed with that approach, and you put them far enough away that somebody else later is going to have a lot harder time getting to them. You fit into kind of a cartoon picture they have of what the Christian is like. And so I think it's overwhelmingly counterproductive, and I think also it tends to distance you from the person you're trying to reach. It says, here I am. I have this neat thing, and there you are, you don't have it yet. You know, you've made a gulf between you and them, and that's not how you get anywhere in building a relationship. So I'm going to later say, yes, we want to work up to that question, but we don't want to start with it. The second I call the medicine wagon sales pitch. Okay. And this one, all through my Christian life, I've heard it be recommended by people. And in our own time, it goes with what's called the prosperity gospel. You've probably heard of that. And what you do is you appeal to people and you say, if you just become a Christian, all your problems will just vanish like that. Pretty soon your financial troubles will be behind you. Your marital troubles will be behind you. Everything is going to go right on the job. Your family relationships are all going to be just fine. If you're a Christian, God will just take care of all of that. He wants Christians to prosper. Well, if we're looking for a strength, I guess we'd say it's effective in the short term. How many of us want solutions to our problems? I do. I bet you do. How many of us want to quit hurting and have better relationships? Everyone wants that. And so I think it does attract people. The trouble is that we're selling Christianity under false pretenses. Okay. We're selling, so to speak, Christianity as if it were something like what you go to the counter in a pharmacy to buy to get over a headache. It's something to get you through your this-worldly problems. And the focus isn't on God. The focus is on self and its problems. And you bring God in as a mere means, like a fairy godmother to get you to the ball with glass slippers, something like that. I think that, yes, Christianity does solve our biggest problem by plenty. No other problem deserves comparison to the one it solves. You know the problem that faces us all, beside which no other matters? The problem of sin and our eternal destiny. Sin and our internal destiny. Where will we be at the end of all this? And yes, it does solve that one. Does it make your checking account bigger? Not necessarily. A young woman called me a few years ago. I guess she was more in the middle, not quite that young. Midweek, she knew I was a leader in the church, and she said, I want to be baptized. I want to be baptized right away, and I want to do it privately. I tried to talk to her a little bit about it, but she just wanted to go through with it. So I went ahead with her wishes on this. I did buy a couple of books to give her to help with trying to, on the other side, what am I supposed to do to grow as a Christian? And I tried to talk to her a few days later. It turned out she said, oh, I tried that. It's all over. You know, I had a lot of problems. You baptized me. God didn't solve them. And so I'm not a Christian anymore. I tried that and it didn't work. Okay. Well, when people try to advertise Christianity as a way to solve those problems, what do you expect? Isn't that exactly the rational kind of outcome if you think this is what it's all about? If I had more time than I do in a sermon, I'd talk about what the Bible calls false prophets in the Old Testament. Jesus warned about them in the New. The number one trait of the false prophets was to turn God into a mere means to solve this worldly problems to get us ahead and keep us safe in the here and now. No, the number one problem is not here. It's later. The third, and Billy, this is something you were dealing with here a little earlier in the children's message. Thank you very much. You know, we could call it being a commercial for the Lord, right? Okay. I've called it on your outline the just let your light shine approach. And I feel much more kindly towards it than I do the others. This method says, and I think it's true as it goes, to show people the beauty of the Christian life. Show them the difference it makes that you have Jesus, that you have the Spirit working in you. Show them kindness and sharing and tolerance, goodness. Okay? And people will be attracted. And you know, one of the things that does attract people is the same terrible things that happen to everyone else do happen to Christians. We have loss in the family, don't we? Loved ones die. People get major illnesses. People lose jobs. It happens. The Christian is not knocked flat. The Christian doesn't lose her or his moorings. People who don't have a foundation for their lives are knocked flat. And people out there, they say, I sure wish I had what you had. You got through that. I wonder how you did it. Maybe I need to know more about that. And I think as far as I've gone in my description of it, that's all great. That's exactly right. And I think it's one of the key things we can do. The trouble is it doesn't stand alone. I sometimes heard people say, that's all you do. They were not going to know why you're glowing with goodness, why you're leading an attractive life unless you tell them. And so it also takes words. It takes a relationship in which that may attract them, but you have to do more than it. So I guess my basic problem with it is it's not the whole story. So I think it's a good beginning point. A fourth one I call the debate tournament approach. A temptation to people like me, whose career as a teacher at Fort Hays and kind of bookish by nature and that kind of stuff, you tend to want to refute everything. Now, somebody says something you think it's a little off, jump in there and you want to argue and debate that kind of thing. And you know, it is a temptation to a lot of people. And so you go out and think, I'll just refute all the infidels. We'll give all the right responses and replies to those particular objections that we're running into. Well, it is worth showing that Christianity is intellectually respectable. It is, because we live in a culture that doesn't think so. And so when we make a showing that it really is, that's good. But I don't think it's very effective in bringing most people to Christ. I think what most people feel is kind of attacked, right? When you attack all of their various ideas and you want to argue with them. And I think it also exaggerates the importance of theories and knowledge. The basic problem for most people is less one of knowledge than of needing to surrender to the Lord. Sure, we need to know some things, but we don't need to know a lot. We need to be able to know enough to tell us that our lives are a mess because of sin, what Jesus did on the cross to save each of us, and that we need to bow and learn from Him. And the biggest problem we all face is surrendering the will, not learning more. Learning is important, but it's secondary to the surrender of the will. I don't know how many of these fixed methods there are. I imagine you recognize each of the ones I talked about. But they all have in common that somebody thinks that there's some one or some maybe two or three right methods. And the way you evangelize is you go out and put the right method on them. I don't see Paul in our text saying that, do you? You might look back in your bulletin insert at the words that Dale read. Look at what Paul says. When Paul was trying to evangelize and he was around Jews, what did he do? He acted like a Jew. And he said, well, we Christians aren't really under the Jewish law, and that's true. He tells us that many times. But when he's around Jews who think that the Jewish law is a big deal, he obeys it too, even though he doesn't have to. When he's around Gentiles, he lives like they do. He doesn't worry about keeping Jewish law in front of them. Whatever he does, to the weak, to the strong, to the Jew, to the Gentile, he adapts to the people that he's trying to reach. He tries to find out where they are, fit in where they are, and help to move them to Christ. I call this the goal-oriented one because the focus is not on a scouting manual that you follow, here's how you do X. Okay? The focus is on the person you're trying to reach. The goal, the purpose of it all, is to help move that person closer to Jesus. That's what we're doing. And as Paul puts it, and I quote from the translation we had of our text, we're finding common ground. Try to find common ground, whatever else you do, and try to do that early. Try to do that first. Well, there was an old saying a few years back. I think it's falling out of favor from overuse, maybe. You remember, different strokes for different folks? Paul sort of saying that, isn't he? Different strokes for different folks. And don't think there's a just right way to go about this. Think, no, loving people. Reach out to that person. Find out who they are and where they are and care about them and enter their world in order to help move them to be closer to Jesus. It doesn't take too long to describe it, though it can take a real lifetime to learn how to do that very well. That means that our methods then will be different for different people. It means that with one person we may want to argue, and another person we may want to just show the goodness, and another person we may want to pop a question. And who knows what might be appropriate. But above all, we're not going through a method. We're talking to people we love, trying to help influence them. I see three main reasons this is superior to any one-size-fits-all method. One, it's more loving. Okay. We're not making a performance. We're not doing a piece of theater and doing something that we've learned to do. We're loving people, and the focus is on them, not us. Second, it's more effective. If you really want to reach people, show you care about them. Enter their world. Befriend them. I don't think most of us really like being subjected to somebody else going through a performance, do you? You'd rather have a friend, and a friend with whom you can openly discuss things and share things. And it's clearly more scriptural, isn't it? Isn't this what Paul said in the text that he did? And I see that modeled in his life. When Paul went to the Greek city of Athens, and he gave a sermon there, and there were a lot of Greeks around, but not Jews, He didn't quote the Old Testament scriptures. Wouldn't have meant a thing to them, would it? And they wouldn't have believed it if he had. Okay? He quoted Greek poets. That was familiar to them. When Paul was with Jews, especially very Orthodox Jews, he went through elaborate Jewish rituals that he needn't have gone through as a Christian at all. In fact, he was arrested while going through one, the one that eventually led to his going to Rome. Okay? He tried to fit in where people were. Now, before I leave this description, I do want to say there's some limits. Okay? You know, different strokes for different folks can go too far. Paul didn't say, for example, that he did some stealing with the thieves, did he? And he didn't go out and do some murdering with the murderers, did he? Okay. There are some lines you don't cross. And he says that. Okay. He said, I'm not really without rules. I'm under law to Christ. There's some things that are really wrong, and you don't do those. But there's a huge latitude of neutral ground. And in that huge latitude of neutral ground, fit in where the person is. Things that aren't really good or bad in themselves, do it for the sake of trying to lead them to Christ. I think, too, we shouldn't shortchange any of the procedure-oriented methods when we fit them in under goals. Isn't there a right time to pop the question? If you just befriend somebody and maybe go fishing with them or bowling with them or something like this on and on to your dying day, and you never raise the question about Jesus, you haven't done any evangelizing at all. You might have had a good friend, but that's about it. You have to somehow or another make sure that that confrontation takes place. I think, too, that the medicine wagon approach, though wrong about the kind of problems, is certainly right about the biggie. It's the one we all need, isn't it? The solution to the problem that faces us all, sin and our eternal destiny. And one other thing, when people are Christians, they really do weather those other things better. No, God doesn't make my checking account bigger. But if my checking account were to suffer, I'm not going to lose my faith because I'm going through a tough time. We're anchored to the rock. We're not built on sandy ground. And I think one other thing to remember is there isn't anything you can do that will always work, is there? The Apostle Paul did a lot of preaching. Thousands and thousands of people believed. Did everyone? He had enemies. They tried to stone him to death. Jesus himself, did everyone believe Jesus? No, Jesus made enemies. And don't think there's some one way to do things so that it will always work. If that wasn't true of Paul and Jesus, it's not going to be true of Steve Trammell either. And so what we need to do is to do our best. If they don't become Christians, make sure it's not our fault. Do what we can to try to help to lead them to Christ and leave the rest to God. Well, I have, as you see in your outline, your bulletin insert, two things to mention in way of conclusions. One I want to talk about, and the other I want to read with you, so keep that sheet handy. I think the necessary foundation for being effective in our relationships, trying to reach everyone, is the same as the necessary foundation for everything else in the Christian life, prayer. Prayer. I would say the starting point for any communication with anyone you want to influence is to go to God. To pray for guidance, to pray for wisdom, pray for openness and humility. We're told in the scriptures that prayers for wisdom are granted. You know, it's in that list of ones you don't have to have doubts about. Okay. And I think the main way that God likes to grant prayers for wisdom is he doesn't want us to be like baby robins. I had some on my back porch this year where they just stay in their nest and they just, you know, squeak away and then the mama bird shows up and drops worms in their mouth eventually. No, God wants us to get past that stage. He wants us to learn to fly and feed others. And the way that God answers prayers for wisdom is we have church programming. We have small groups. We have Bible studies. We have Sunday school. We have church services. We have church activities of every kind. You pray for wisdom and don't show up for those, forget it. That's a contradiction in terms. If you ask God for wisdom, be at the places that God wants to give you that wisdom. So we should take it to God. We should ask for wisdom. We should ask for guidance. And we should empty our hearts so that God can fill them with his leading, with the person. When we make prayer the basis, some important things happen. Okay. One, we open ourselves humbly to the will and leading of God. We're no longer thinking about self doing a piece of theater in front of someone. Second, we focus not on self and whether I'm doing something right. We focus on the person we're trying to reach. Aren't they really the important thing? The focus is on them and loving them, not on Steve Trammell going through something properly. And third, it's always important to remember that you and I have never, no human has ever really converted anyone in a period, sort of a sense. Conversion is the work of the Holy Spirit. God has done the incredible compliment of allowing us to be His sidekicks. Isn't that wonderful? We're His sidekicks, but God is the one doing the work. And it's just a wonderful compliment that we're allowed to take part in that. And that also is kind of reassuring. Doesn't it take a little weight off of us? I don't have to feel quite as responsible. Do my best. Leave the rest to God. Well, today I want to finish by reading, and no comments, just reading, 10 suggestions that I see is based on what I've said so far today. And I hope they're good suggestions. I ask that you think about them and put them where you see them to being good and worth something in your own life into practice. Number one, be sure that you have an accurate knowledge of at least the basic doctrines and principles of your own religion. Continual learning about our faith is a lifelong project and an indispensable part of growing into an ever more mature and effective discipleship. Number two, take the time and trouble to learn about what others believe. Without this knowledge, you can't really speak to where they presently are very effectively. Three, don't assume that everything in other religions and points of view is 100% false. Although we believe that only Christianity is 100% true, other religions and views share a good deal of common ground with our faith. Also, these other views have had some pretty impressively talented and knowledgeable people in them, so it isn't likely that they are packed with nonsense from A to Z. Four, be sure not to mix your personal opinions about controversial moral, social, and political issues with the gospel facts. Stick to basic Christianity. Five, do at least as much listening as talking, especially initially. Evangelism isn't about going through some pat set of performances or about zinging the infidels with some choice recitation of memorized one-liners. It's about really loving and caring for these people enough to enter their world for the sake of bringing them to Christ. Six, avoid every trace of smug, arrogant, know-it-all attitudes. Christians have a too often well-deserved bad reputation in this matter. Use the golden rule. If I were that other person, how would I like someone acting this way toward me? Seven, be completely honest. Don't pretend to know what you don't know or to have answers to questions where you really aren't sure. And don't promise what God never promised, such as affluence and smooth sailing all through life. Eight, be flexible. People are different and people aren't machines. So it's a big mistake to slap some prefabbed evangelistic ploy on them in a one-size-fits-all manner. Nine, avoid letting things degenerate into a mere debate. Once a debate starts, sides are already drawn up, and people think only in terms of winning and losing. The only value in such a debate is showing that we can indeed defend ourselves against our attackers. But for making new converts, friendly cooperation, open-mindedness, and mutual respect are completely essential. And finally, lead attractive lives. As Billy said, be commercials for Christ. Lead attractive lives. The scriptures speak of the sheer beauty and joyful composure of the Christian life as if it were a lovely fragrance that attracts others to want to share our faith. I am not talking about prissy pietistic do-gooderism, which actually emits an opposite sort of smell. The traits to cultivate are humility, gentleness, patience, kindness, peaceableness and peacefulness, being non-judgmental, having a quiet but secure bedrock of joy and confidence that keeps you afloat no matter what. I'd like to end today by hearing other words from the same apostle to the same church in a different letter. God has given us this task of reconciling people to Him. For God was in Christ, reconciling the world to Himself, no longer counting people's sins against them. And He gave us this wonderful message of reconciliation. So we are Christ's ambassadors. God is making His appeal through us. We speak for Christ when we plead, come back to God. For God made Christ, who never sinned, to be the offering for our sin, so that we could be made right with God through Christ. As God's partners, we beg you not to accept this marvelous gift of God's kindness and then ignore it. For God says, at just the right time I heard you, on the day of salvation I helped you. Indeed, the right time is now. Today is the day of salvation.
You've been listening to Dr. Steve Trammell at Hayes Christian Church. Hayes Christian Church is a non-denominational fellowship in Hayes, Kansas. We are supported by the generosity of our members, attenders, and friends. The financial support we raise goes to projects which further spread the gospel to those who do not yet know Jesus, to local, national, and international missions, and they help to keep these podcasts free. If you'd like to share a monetary gift with us, please visit our webpage at hayeschristianchurch.org and click on the donate button. Or you may mail your gift to P.O. Box 1111, Hayes, Kansas 67601. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information, we would love to hear from you. Simply go to our webpage and click on the Contact Us form. Thank you for your generosity, and may God bless you as you seek to follow Him.